Earth's Mightiest Hero, Captain Marvel, Issue 1.
An all-new high-flying series by Kelly Sue DeConnick, Dexter Soy, cover by Ed McGuinness.
July 2012. Hashtag Captain Marvel.
Marvel!
Listener to our podcast, Jeff and Rick present Unpacking the Power of Power Pack,
where we journey through each issue of comics that include a member of the most underrated Marvel series from the 80s while drinking beer,
analyzing awesome and amazing adjacent adolescent adventures, and absorbing alcohol.
I'm Jeff.
And I am Rick.
There's no hope for him now, Travis. He's suffering. You know we've got to do it.
Yes, Mama, but he was my random banner. I'll do it.
Random banter time, buddy. Talk to me, tell me tall tales and tantalizing tidbits of trivia today.
It's either Old Yeller or The Yearling.
Old Yeller. You know, that happy feel-good movie that we were exposed to in elementary school for several years on end in our childhood that in no way scarred entire generations of children yet to this year and day.
Are you kidding? That was a feel-good movie of whatever year it came out in. I used to love watching that, followed by Grave of the Fireflies, with a Chaser of Brian song, just to round it all out.
Oh, that's a fun trilogy day. That is a good way to spend a holiday. That's a good Christmas series right there.
Yeah, between that and also just going to sleep to the gentle sounds of Schindler's List. Are you saying that there's going to be somebody that's going to be tried to put down?
I think so.
Okay.
I think there is. You are correct. But who could it be?
I don't know, but I will segue into that and talk about some pop culture that I've been consuming of late. I've set my way back machine to go back to the lovely, lovely year of 2001 and catch up on a TV series that I missed from back then. Let's see if you can figure out what it is.
Okay.
It's about a family of undertakers.
Oh, is this 6 feet under?
Yes, it is.
Never seen it. I am familiar with the era that it came out, and I know that it was very popular, but there was a lot of stuff that's popular always.
Yeah.
And I don't always get to see all of it, so.
Yeah, this is good. I actually enjoyed this a lot. I'm working through it with my wife. She looks at me askance every so often because she's just like, why are we watching this depressing show about death? I'm like, because it's funny! And it has some good, funny moments in it, but I'm enjoying it. I think it's a really good show. I'm glad to finally be able to catch up on it. I was interested because we've been rewatching Dexter, and Michael C. Hall came from 6 feet under, so It's kind of nice, kind of interesting. But I'm liking going back and visiting stuff from the past because I just can't get over my nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about nostalgia, do you know what's up and coming as of today, what got released today when we're recording this?
X-Men 97 on Disney. Yeah, I was paying attention to that pretty hard a couple of months ago, knowing that it was fully coming up. And I'm like, gonna be watching that. I forgot all about it. Well, I knew it was still coming, but I just didn't know when.
Yeah.
I may also be a little excited because there's going to be a new Bluey episode coming out here pretty soon.
today, I watched the first episode right before we recorded. And let me tell you, the cheese factor is just tuned right into the old X-Men TV show. There is just some weird throwbacks they do. They do some calling out of some characters and some things that are just like, oh, well, that's interesting. And my family is hating this because I keep throwing out stuff like, oh, that means that. Oh, that means that. That could either be this or this. And they are just like, I don't get it. I don't get it. What are you talking about? You are making nonsense words with your mouth. That is my nostalgia trip for the day of going back through pop culture, new and old, and revisiting things that are really good and really exciting.
Neat.
Mm-hmm.
I have also gone back and watched something not super old, but a little bit older, old enough for me. I have watched Shazam and Shazam 2, Fury of the Gods.
Shazam!
Gomer! Call me Magic Man, my name's Shazam.
I have seen the first one, And I actually enjoyed the first movie. I thought it was kind of fun and entertaining. For a DC movie, it was really good.
that's darning praise right there.
Yeah.
I found them to be okay. I saw that they were on Netflix and that they were going to be leaving at the end of the month. And I said, I'm sick and I kind of want to watch something. Why did I kick these out while the rest of the family's asleep? And I said, I have seen these. There are problems. There are little, I'm going to call it continuity problems, but it's just in the sense of like characters.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, Billy Batson and Shazam are two entirely different people. And I don't just mean that physically. I mean, seeing how they interact and act, that is not the same person.
Yeah, like I said, I like the first one better. I think the first one is just fun. It's a silly, enjoyable, fun movie. I haven't seen the second one because I kind of heard some bad things about it. And you know what? I like the first one. I'd like to just like the first one.
It followed in fairly good, but again, it's just not great. The first one probably was a little bit stronger. Second one, almost comparable, but I found flaws in plenty of them in both. They were very much in my, oh, that was a fine film. I don't think I'd have to go and do massive reviewings of them and cult in on the Shazam films. They were decent enough.
The second one could have been much worse. The second one could have had Dr. Manhattan doing a guest star appearance. And Dr. Manhattan guest starring into anything with Shazam would just be problematic. Sorry, you probably missed that completely, but that's okay.
I'm going to act like I know what's going on, but I'm going to assume it has something to do with Shazam being more of a young teen thing and Dr. Manhattan's normal wear. And the fact that I think that Dr. Manhattan did a massive is the cause of the massive reboot on DC.
Let me just put it this way. Dr. Manhattan showed up wearing his normal costume, which is nothing. And he was talking to Mary Marvel, who is a preteen girl. And just that image alone is enough to say, that ain't right.
Yeah, there's some of that.
That ain't right. So, I leave you with that. Let's go ahead and get into this comic book because we got to get into sadness, I guess, or something. Let's get into this by Jeff giving us a 2 cents replay of the last episode.
Sebastian Shaw is here to kill your kids. Or not. As a fight is quickly suppressed when Laura and Finesse figure out that Shaw actually escaped and beat up a bunch of teachers so that he could help the Junior X kids escape Avengers Alcatraz so that they could go join the Messiah Hope and figure out this whole Phoenix event thing. Everyone eventually agrees that this is fine, but they will have to put on a show for all the campus cameras so they have an all-out bare-knuckle throwdown of the fakest proportions so that the X-Kids can walk off campus and the Avengers have some CYA insurance. Now that Loa decides to stay on at the Avengers campus because they have access to some seriously good waves, 2 sentence replay is over, why don't you give me a beer and tell us what our power pack pick is?
My pleasure, my friend. Why don't you reach into that lovely, lovely paper bag and find what the Tin Man has brought you on this lovely, lovely Tin Eve?
Oh man, I hope it's courage, or brains, or a heart, or maybe some really stylish shoes. Here we have vicious, chocolatey, roasty old engine oil. It's got an old Model T on it that's yellow. They never came in yellow, but this is a black ale. Ooh, old engine oil. Why would we give me this with our little Sentinel buddy that needs a tune-up?
I may have saw this as like, hey, let's get this. We got something with the Sentinel. And yeah, old engine oil is a bittersweet beer with smoky notes and a lingering finish, beautifully engineered with premium roasted malt for a velvety mouthfeel. I cracked open the can way over away from me and I said, what the heck is that? That would be a bittersweet beer with smoky notes and a lingering finish with premium roasted malt. Yeah, I can smell that from across the room, my friend.
I'm looking forward to getting into it. I just stared at the can for a while because it's
black.
It's also story time on it's great. It just says beer ingenuity. Ingenuity! Yay! Because this is old engine oil. Ooh, that's a dark beer.
Well, it's called engine oil. What do you want? Of course it's a dark beer.
Don't know. I want a good stout. That's what I really want. What do we got? We got... Ooh, that's pretty pitch black. That does not let light transfer through that at all.
It does
not. Got a lovely tan-colored head on that.
Crafted with a twist since 1983. Mm-mm-mm. Yes, yes, yes. Beautiful, dark, very foamy head on it, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way you want to drink it.
Waiting for that to settle down. It's a subtle aroma to it, for my nose right now anyway. But yeah, I'm just kind of getting that kind of dank closet ale smell.
Yeah, this is a bittersweet beer. 6% ABV, 40 IBU.
Hmm.
It's going to be bitter.
Okay.
It's a dark, dark, malty beer.
Yeah, it's a very dark ale. It is one would call it a black ale, which is what they've called it on the can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's not too bad. Flavor notes on it aren't really all that complex. There is that kind of tart bitter that's on the center of the tongue. Then after a little while, I think the malts kind of kick in and kind of blend out the flavor a little bit. It's pretty easy drinking. It's not too bad. The bitter on it isn't even all that excessive. It's just kind of like, hey, I curl your tongue a touch. Just go about your day.
Yeah. It is an ale. So that's different from a stout feel, different from a stout taste on it. Definitely got the English bitter notes on it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a bit of a meal beer here.
It is a bit of a meal. Just saying the English notes, that I think sums it up perfectly. It is a very English noted beer.
Yeah. This is a bit of an old classic type of a thing. It is something that you taste and you're like, yes, I've had this before. Or you feel that you're in an English pub. It's smooth, it's dark, it's very rich. It's a little bit comforting, actually.
It's pretty pleasant.
Yeah.
It fairly easy, little bit of notes to it, but fairly easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too difficult.
Not too difficult at all.
Kind of like this book.
Mm-hmm. Nope, no difficulties in this book at all. Old Yeller.
Let's get to the opening credits, if you please, Jeff.
Avengers Academy, issue number 32, August 2012. What the Heart Wants, Part 1. Credits. Writer, Christos Engage. Penciler, Timothy Green II. Inker, Jeff Hewitt. Colorist, Chris Sotomayor. Letterer, Joe Caramanca. Editor, Bill Roseman, Jake Thomas.
Featuring Giant Man, Tigra, Hawkeye, X-23, Justin Seafort, White Tiger, Hazmat, Striker, Metal, Reptile, Finesse, Lightspeed.
A boy and his robot.
A robot and his boy.
Two dorks and a podcast.
A tip of the hat to an old Bloom County comic.
Whatever. Here we are with Justin and a Sentinel. Even though the bot can self-repair, the kid likes to help because, well, if you have a MIG welder that can make the repair look better, you want to use it.
Snicked.
Look, if Laura wants to use the welder, she can just ask. She doesn't have to be all snickety about it.
Actually, I think that she wants something a little more interesting than welding equipment.
Like what?
The Sentinel's heart!
A robot doesn't have...
You know what I mean. She wants to turn the mutant murder machine off. Remember? They kill her kind. That kind of sucks.
Yeah, but Sentinel is different. He's been reprogrammed. He's Justin's friend. And he does not believe in that hogwash about genetic genocide.
Destroy all mutants.
Stupid boot-up message.
Okay. So, not perfect, but Justin has reprogrammed the Purple Mutant Eater. There is a new set of priorities. It will not abandon Justin, not now or ever. It will protect all life. It will not harm living beings except to protect Justin and others. It will always be the designated driver, and it will knit to relax and, well, destroy all mutants.
Justin has tried to erase that, but it's hard-coded into the CPU, kind of like Sasquatch and IPAs in the Pacific Northwest.
That really does not make sense, but there is no other way to deal with it besides a memory wipe, which is a non-starter for Justin.
Yeah, there is no good way to erase a friend's mind. Trust me, I've tried.
Wait, what?
Don't worry about it. I'm probably talking about someone else. Look, this school protects people, and this is the only place where this odd couple can actually be. And if Laura does not like that, understanding and sanctuary flows in more than one direction. Then there is the door, or gate, or cliff. Or whatever, and she can use it to leave.
Well, now Laura is annoyed. Something that no one wants to see, because people have a tendency to die when she's annoyed. So she walks away.
White Tiger is always happy to see another wild animal in the wild. She also wants to make sure that Laura does not have the hots for Justin, because she wants a crack at that smart young stud.
Okay? Laura does not want to talk about boys. She is more interested in the Justin Sentinel problem. And that is something that White Tiger theorizes is akin to owning a pet for the retro grunge robot wrangler.
Oh, Laura had a pet once. A dog given to her by the facility. Something that she grew attached to and was ordered to kill. Which she did.
Well, she did wait till the last moment to do the ending of Old Yeller.
Oh, that's so much better.
Let's move on to Laura talking to somebody else.
Oh, I'm sure that will be fun.
Dr. Pym wants to give Laura, and us the readers, an update about the AVX crossover. There's been a development. The Phoenix Force has landed and taken up residence in five X-Men, specifically Peter Rasputin, Emma Frost, Namor, Ileana Rasputin, and Scott Summers.
Huh. Peter, Emma, Namor, Ileana, Scott?
Yeah, the Phoenix Five.
If I'm not mistaken, doesn't their name spell...
Let's just put a pin on that for now, please.
Ouch! Not where I want a pin placed.
Anyway, these powered-up people have been using this ethereal force to do cool stuff like baking cookies for the homeless, building beehives for Boy Scouts, and feeding the world.
Pym is worried, but he thinks that they are doing good, and most of the X-Men have returned back home. You know, if Laura wants to go, she is welcome to.
Laura passes. Nope. She's good.
Hazmat sees her leaving Pym's lab and starts chatting with Laura about the chances that the Phoenix Five can cure her. Sure, the whole AVX thing might have put a bad taste in their mouths, but maybe if Laura acted as go-between for her, you know?
And before Laura can answer, Stryker comes in, raising the alarm. The Sentinel is going nuts.
And bolts.
Cute.
The robot is on a big defensive protocol and is trying to aggressively protect Justin and friends from some incoming Omega-level mutant threat, namely a Phoenixed-up Emma Frost, who has just shown up to deal with a little side project.
It's good to have a new hobby. Hers happens to be the annihilation of giant purple robots.
And gosh, why would she be here? He asks, completely knowing the answer.
Yeah, you and me both. And guess who is all ready to throw down some gauntlets? You know that its mutant destruction protocol includes directives for dealing with the Phoenix Force.
Gordon Ramsay has something similar for dealing with dirty kitchens.
Well, this fight does not last long. Big robot, powerful, otherworldly force, awesome fashion sense. Yeah, this is all Emma. No contest. She'll slag this and move on. You can send her a thank you card later.
Justin is not okay with this. The evil machine is his friend. Just ask Laura.
Oh, right. Laura. Emma wants to know why she's still here. The X-Men are all at Olive Garden right now.
Ah, I get it. When you are here, you're family.
You got it. But Laura is not down with breadsticks just now.
Emma can fix that. In fact, she wants to fix Laura.
Oh, cosmically powered brain tinkering. No, thank you. Lab experiments have already occurred in her brain pan. Not looking for more. Thank you. No, thank you.
Pym steps in and politely asks Emma to stop. This is not the robot that she is looking for.
Yeah, no thanks. Here's what she can do as a middle ground compromise. She can fry the CPU, completely destroying its anti-mutant protocols, memories, and personality, and then give it a head-to-toe makeover so it looks nothing like it used to either. And then Pym can make a new mind and personality for it, because he's never dropped the ball on that one. Am I right?
Pym might be on board with this, but Justin says, no, not okay. This is his friend. Do not lobotomize him.
Oh, Justin, you do not give demands to Emma. Even before she was powered up, she was not one to take advice from those lesser than her. So she puts Baby into a corner.
Are you painting Justin as Jennifer Grey from Dirty Dancing?
Well, yes. Yes, I did. You got a problem with that, bub?
Nope. And the Sentinel has its dancing shoes on and is ready to have the time of its life. It's Patrick Swayze time.
Protect Justin. Counter measures working. Engaged.
Shree!
The Sentinel sends Emma reeling with a sonic attack.
All power to weapons. Warning. Run, Justin. Run.
Recovering from the Purple Protector's punitive projections, Emma removes the robot's arms and legs.
Shrunch!
To continue the dirty dancing theme, Emma has had it with her new dance partner, and she is ready to do something that would be inappropriate to do in front of children.
So, pretty please, could all the students and faculty evacuate the campus so that she can bust out some medieval moves on this mutilated mech?
Dr. Pym can get downright pushy against student rights when a god is threatening to melt some metal. Sure, he feels that he has to protect the kids, what with them being in his protection and all of that, but mostly, he knows that they had all better exit stage left, right, or wherever before this unstable force that eats planets decides that they are in her way.
While the enforced exodus occurs, Emma decides that since this is the last Sentinel on Earth, and since it had the audacity to hurt her, that she is going to take her time and enjoy this. Then she starts torturing this protective purple people pleaser to death.
Can you take a guess who's not happy with this? That's right. It's sad Justin. He's really upset. And giant hands be darned. He's gonna beg and plead and cry and fight for the robot he loves.
This fierce demonstration is witnessed by the rest of the academy, including Laura, who flashes back to her puppy. and rage mode is on.
Eat claws, you preppy New England wit!
Whoa! Switch to decaf, buddy. The rage is impressive, and it gets the amped-up educator to refocus her attention, and it gets the rest of the school to choose a side.
Even Dr. Pym decides that it's time to put on his big boy boxers and go toe-to-toe with his students against the Phoenix floating over their campus, ready to commence her declaration of death on the Sentinel. Maybe a few other things that have made her to-do list.
To be continued? Let's talk about the themes of the issue, my friend. First of all, I have to say, I really like utilizing the Berkeley-breathed Bloom County joke from the beginning. A boy and his penguin, a penguin and his boy, two dips and his dad. It's funny.
It's been a long while since I've read any Bloom County. Really, I mean, liked it, though. Loved it.
Pulling a comic strip joke from 1982. Yeah, that's the way I roll. Okay.
Deep, deep cut.
All right.
Because we could claim we're nostalgic and not out of date.
Dude, I'm claiming both, all right? Thank you. Let's talk about this cover. Once again, by Giuseppe Camoncoli and Jim Tralampidis. This is a pretty sweet cover. I really like the work that these guys have done. I think that they usually can pull something pretty cool up. This is just an explosion of orange. Of course, we've got the AVX on top and Avengers Academy, but that's all getting kind of eaten up by this giant orange Phoenix Force fire bird in the background here, just kind of covering everything. Right directly in front of that, we got Emma Frost, arms outstretched, floating in the air, right above the Sentinel, who is just being rained upon, and he's got like all this fire coming down on him, and he's covering up in his hand, looks like Metal, Hazmat, and Laura. I'm assuming that Justin is kind of hunkered underneath all of them.
I would imagine so. It looks really good, though. Yeah, it's a raining firestorm. It looks neat, yeah. And the protective Sentinel. I love the Sentinel being used as a protective device where it wants to protect people. It just so good.
That is a good, good cover. Very appropriate for this. This kind of is the story that we've got going on here. Yeah, it's neat. It's fun. It's well-placed, and I like it.
It's a good one.
I guess we like the cover. Let's just get into the issue itself, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a family-friendly show, so I don't think we can dwell all that much on this, but I still laugh at the little joke that somebody anywhere put together with the first letter of the five people who become take over the Phoenix Force: Peter, Emma, Namor, Ileana, and Scott.
I never would have expected them to like spell out the word spine.
Spin,
or a
spin.
Snipe or pines or peens, which is actually the plural of the back end of a ball peen hammer. It's the rounded part.
I'm just saying that somebody has a very childlike mind, and I'm here for it all day long.
And usually it's us.
Yeah. No. I think that's pretty funny. We don't get to talk about the Phoenix Five that much, but what do you think about them? Do you remember this at all? Did you look into this time in X-Men? What did you think about this entire part of the storyline?
Now, I did not read the entirety of the series, but I do reference it mentally in my head quite often because it is the classic, you know, the AVX fight that didn't have to happen. It was forced. I just recall it so vividly that it was just such a forced fight where it's just like, wow, mistakes are really being made on both sides, but boy, are mistakes really being made. And because of reading these, I actually said, you know what? I actually want to go back and read the AVX saga. So I'm like 4 or 5 issues deep on the 16 issues of it right now. So I'm getting a refresher course as we speak.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. From what you've seen so far, or from just your thoughts, would these be the five characters that you would see or you would give the Phoenix Force to from the X-Men lineup?
It works, but man, I don't know if it would be. I think each person that was given to is problematic in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Jump forward in time by X number of years, and you had the, I'm going to just say Trial of the Phoenix. That's probably, it's where the Phoenix was like, hey, I'm going to pick a champion, and I'm going to take a bunch of Earth's heroes and villains, and then you all have the Phoenix Force now do Mortal Kombat, and whoever wins is going to get it, where she really just wanted T'Challa to take it. She's like, these trials will be over if you accept me, and he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then at the end, it didn't go to T'Challa.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of interesting. So, I mean, you can give the Phoenix Force to anybody. A lot of times it's going to devolve into, no matter what altruistic control issue that they have, where they're like, I'm going to use this power for good, invariably, that fire burns a little bit too hot, and it just is the Phoenix again, and it is a problem.
Yeah. I kind of like this. For me, Colossus is probably the outlier of this.
Very much so, yes.
On some levels, I also think Namor is too, because Namor's not seen as a team player. It's always just him. So he kind of feels a little out of place too. Emma and Scott, yep, they're kind of working together as a team. Ileana, this is definitely a point where she's becoming more of a name. Yeah, it's just an interesting combination.
Is this when Colossus is Juggernaut?
Yes. Yes.
Because I know that he seemed like he got very quiet as Juggernaut Colossus, but now he's also jacked up on the, you know, Phoenix juice as well. So it's kind of like he's got a lot going on, but he seems like he's internalizing it quite a lot.
Oh, he's not. He's broken.
Okay.
Colossus is broken. They broke him a long time ago. This is part of the massive breaking. They broke him further in the Krakoa era. I'm hoping that the next time out we get good Colossus again, but I fear that that ship might have sailed, but he may be on reclamation land. I don't know. We shall see. I guess we could go ahead and get into the actual parts of this book that we're here to talk about. Let's talk a little bit about A Boy and His Robot.
That's the main draw of this. In that sense, I really want to draw Laura into this conversation as well. I know we're going to talk about her later, but we can talk about Justin and the Sentinel if you want.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Let's talk about those two. We get a little bit more of the backstory. I haven't read Sentinel, the miniseries where he's introduced, but we get a lot of insight into Justin, his father, the relationship that they have, and moving forward from that, nobody quite understands him. He feels like he's got a home here where he's understood, where he's accepted.
Yep.
But then we kind of turn right around and then we have the issue that Laura brings up. Hey, you know what? This ain't okay. I really don't like this.
Yep.
He can't be accepted anywhere. And he's trying to be.
Because his big buddy is a Sentinel and that's a murder machine. So some people are going to be like, oh, okay, you got a big robot. But then to another certain large population, they're going to be like, oh, that is a hate machine. That is racism incarnate. That's a genocidal racist.
Well, the first thing is you've got a big robot and this is just, we can't have this here. You are asking for danger. You're asking for problems. And this is just going to be an issue. So he goes and hangs out with superheroes where this shouldn't be a problem, except
still a problem.
This kills a certain population of the superheroes.
Yeah. And there's the aspect too. I know in the next issue we're going to cover where it's like, Justin doesn't have powers.
No.
He's just good with robots. And he's got his own traumas, and his buddy is a big hate machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like his home really is the Sentinel. He's at the Avengers Academy because that's where he can keep his friend.
Yeah, and that's where there are some people that are like-minded and accept him.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, most of the people there will just accept him, but the mutants that are there do have a problem with it, and Laura is, of course, the one who starts it up. Let's get into Laura's twisted childhood, shall we?
A female clone of Wolverine who was trained at birth to be an assassin and forced to not have any emotional connection to anybody, and anything that they gave her to have an emotional connection to was simply so that they could train her to kill it without remorse.
I mean, it's the anthem of my life. It's a story that's deep within my heart that causes it to beat. Yeah. I don't like talking about it because it makes some people uncomfortable.
Yeah. I know. I always get sad when you do talk about it and the tears composed purely of My Chemical Romance songs pour out of your face.
Well, part of the reason you're also crying, too, is because I'm threatening to kill you.
No, well, there's that. You got claws.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like talking about it, though. All right. Yes. Laura has a twisted childhood. We've seen a lot of it. We've seen bits and pieces of it. We know that she has trained it as an assassin. I don't think anything is as effective as what is in this issue, though. The story that she tells White Tiger about, yes, I had a puppy once. It was given to me. I was encouraged to make friends with it. And then I was encouraged to kill it to make me die a little bit on the inside.
And with the aspect of if she says no and she doesn't kill it, then they're going to take the puppy away and make her watch as they kill it in the most horrific, long-winded fashion possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, terrible. The connection that I see in this, honestly, though, is to blend these two together. Laura is the Sentinel and also Justin. There's a big commingling of things in there. Sentinel's a killing machine. So is she. Justin has a robot that he loves and doesn't want anything to happen to. Laura had a puppy that she didn't want to have anything happen to. It's this big, the four of them, including the puppy, are really just this kind of commingled. they're the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I mean, Justin is definitely more like the puppy.
Well, there's that. But he's also the puppy owner.
Some would say that the puppy owned Laura. And
there's a little bit of that.
Killed her master.
Well, we don't fully know if she did or didn't, because there's a little clip in this when she stands up and says no to Emma, where she's thinking of the dog, and the scientists come up to go, okay, Laura, it's time, and she kind of stands there defensively and says no. And that's when she says no to Emma and kind of, you know, stabs her. Not that it takes.
Getting back to Justin the robot, this is part of what we're talking about, though, is this is kind of the heart of what this book is about, though. This is a very simple story. There's not much in here. There's not much to it. We get through a lot of the beats of this pretty quickly. A lot of the scenes are really drawn out. They're really big. Big pictures in here. Not a lot of meat in the story itself. But we still manage to get what's at the heart of this, which is that Justin and the Sentinel are looking for a home. They are partners. They're trying to live. They're trying to find a place where they're not persecuted against. People don't understand their relationship. And it's very easy to just say, well, it's just a machine. What is the sentence? What's the emotion? But when we're faced with an impossible decision like this, where, I mean, honestly, Emma wants to destroy this, she's going to destroy it. She's got the Phoenix power. This is her calling in life, and this is what she wants to do. So it's not like anybody is going to be really effective on stopping her because she's a god. So yes, it is much simpler just to say, look, it's just a robot. Let it go. I know this is going to be hard, but this is an impossible task. You're past tipping at windmills right now, Don Quixote. You're tipping against planets, okay? So this is just not going to work for you.
Yeah, especially when they're like, we can build you another robot. That's not a problem. We can make you a new one.
But it's not going to be the same.
But it's not the same. Yeah, it's not the same at all. He found this robot. He rebuilt this robot. He's befriended the robot. He has abandonment issues, and he has made it so that him and the robot are going to be sticking around together.
But I think it's beyond that, because I don't even think it's the time and effort of rebuilding or building the robot. That's not even it. And I think that that's one of the pieces that a lot of people in this book are missing. It's just a robot. We understand you put time into it. You can build a new one. No. It's not about a project. It's not about a thing. This is about somebody yeah. I care about.
Yeah, it's not a shop project. It is a person. It is a relationship that he has built and developed over however long he's had this robot. It is a person. It is his friend. It is the family that he has that he knows will be there for him.
I have no idea what it's like because I don't have friends. My family just doesn't listen to me, and they've tied me in this basement, locked me down here, and I just want to get out. Nobody lets me out. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Wait, I apologize. That was your lines. Never mind.
I thought that was Clinton Robinson's line.
The only other thing I kind of had here was we have Hank, and he has one thing in mind here. He recognizes the danger, and he just does not want the kids harmed. He is taking the easiest out that he possibly can. He's like, mm-hmm. I don't want to fight in this. I want to stay out of it. I've tried to keep us away from the danger of this entire fight, and the danger has landed on my doorsteps.
Yeah.
What is my easy exit escape?
Yeah, it's like, the angry mob wants the thing. Okay, take the thing and just please go.
And the angry mob is one person. But yeah, it's a good
metaphor. Yeah, the angry mob is one person and way stronger than an angry mob. Yeah.
Going with that, Hank is not Atticus Finch in this. He is not going to be the lone man standing in front of the jail cell in To Kill a Mockingbird. He is like, nope, that ain't. I am just going to let this mm-hmm. this typhoon come through here and just take away everything that's dear to this boy, because it's going to save everybody else.
Yeah, it'll save everyone and everything else, and we can rebuild this. Because for him, it's just a robot. He's like, yeah, we can rebuild this quite easily. Hey, Emma's making a compromise. She just wants everything about your robot to go away. That is a complete compromise. Let's just go.
Do you people realize how many robots I've built? Do you know how many times I've rebuilt Ultron and Jocasta and...
And Alchema, maybe I tell you what, I'll let you pick whose mind that has mental trauma gets cloned over into your new robot.
Oh, you mean that's not the thing I should be doing? Oh, I'm sorry. Is there anything else that you wanted to get into and talk about?
Not that I can think of right now. I mean, I really wanted to just talk about how like Laura and the Sentinel are the same. Just the whole thing on that. So I was glad to be able to talk about that. I think we pretty much covered it because there was stuff going on, but it was not super deep because it was basically very much of the, we want to destroy your robot. No. I want to destroy your robot. No. Well, I'm going to destroy your robot.
Yeah.
I did like the fact that White Tiger wanted to ask him at a concert, though.
Well, yeah, because let's be random.
That came out of nowhere. I really dug on that. I thought that was really great because it's little character moments like that, which are really driving this series for me and really making me enjoy it.
And Justin going, White Tiger asked me out?
No, he didn't even know.
If that scene was able to progress, that would have been it. White Tiger asking me out?
Maybe, or he would have been so ignorant. He'd been like, oh yeah, I like Lily Chan. Oh, yeah, sure, that'd be cool. We could go to that. We all going or just to people that are fans?
Nah, so he would have geeked out.
Yeah, it's quite possibly. It would have been neat to see.
Let's do some Gallery of Greatness. What piece of art in this book needs to be pinned up onto the side of the Sentinel's robot? Because that's what we're doing now. Let's go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and do backup first because I'm going to go ahead and go to that scene that you were just talking about. And this is White Tiger jumping. And this is right before she talks to Laura. And that, kind of like we're introduced to that entire conversation. And she's jumping down after she's been doing some gymnastics routine, but the way that she's jumping down, she's got her arms out, she's got like one leg up, she's kind of coming down in a ballet pose, arched out, and it's I feel pretty. It's just, they have made her very sexualized in that one picture. It's it's a thing. So I don't know, it stood out to me and it made me laugh. I don't know why. That's my backup joke one. It just made me laugh. I thought it was silly. So what do you have for a backup joke one, sir?
My backup joke one is on page 10 of Marvel Unlimited, and I call it Man, this hallway is a tight fit. And this is the bottom half of the page, and it's after Stryker has come in and said, the Sentinel's going crazy, and everybody's running out of the hallway to go, you know, see what's going on and stop the Sentinel or figure it out or fix it. And Giant Man's all crunched down in the back. It's like he's crawling through a Willis duct right now because he's a giant man in a hallway.
Again, why? Just be regular size, Pym, until you need to be tall. Come on.
He never is. He never is. He's always just, I'm like 30 feet tall. I guess I'll just talk to people while drinking a coffee now, I guess.
It just seems so impractical. I don't get it.
It's to show that he has a superpower is all it really boils down to.
We don't need to. Nobody else goes, Hazmat doesn't go around going, look, I'm just leaking radiation.
I know.
Okay. All right. So my top joke one is, because I'm a mean, cruel man, my top joke one is all the way kind of near the back, and it's tiny, sad boy. It's Giant Man holding Justin. Justin just being all sad, and Giant Man's holding him, and he just looks all sad, and it's funky. Actually, I got the wrong one. It's just funky looking. There's a size disproportion here. He's all sad and everybody's up front. And
in the background,
it's weird.
In a giant hand just floating in the background is Justin.
And you got Metal and Hazmat and Stryker and Julie there. And they're all looking sad. And there's a sad boy and a giant hand in the background. I don't know. It made me laugh.
I get it. Trust me, I get
it. All right. What do you have for your top joke one, sir?
Well, see if you can determine a theme here as I guide you to page 9, and I call it, Man, That's a Small Door. And this is when Laura is talking with Giant Man, and Laura's walking out of a doorway, and Giant Man's all crunched down in this room, looking like he's very sad because he's got a doorway that he's going to really have to crawl through.
It's not a problem to... You don't need to be sad, Hank. All you need to do is shrink down. Be normal sized. Deal with it.
Rick, you don't understand. It's such a small door. It's so small.
It's a huge door. You're just being like, stupid big.
It's like this school is a dollhouse.
You know what? That makes me angry. That makes me so angry. It reminds me of my backup Good Art, where we got Laura mode. Angry Laura mode. She just thought about her puppy that she was told to kill, and she snicks up her claws, and she says no, and her hair's wild, and she's looking fierce, and it's a pretty sweet picture.
It's a good one. I agree. My backup best one is on page 3, and I call it Out of the Shadows. And this little bottom right panel where Justin's all kitted up for welding and the Sentinel's in the background, and then a shadowy foreground element is an arm and a hand, with two claws popped out of it going snicked. And it's just like, oh, that's really kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's really neat because you get a nice placement of all the characters and everybody has their little element that they're at. And you see a hand, but you know exactly whose it is.
Well, yeah, it's Wolverine's hand.
Mm-hmm.
Two claws, Wolverine, but we know it's Wolverine. All right. My top one is, of course, the final splash page because it's just cool. It's where they've had enough. If you want the Sentinel, you'll have to go through us. And it's the Avengers Academy about to attack this goddess, and they're standing on the just beaten up remains of the Sentinel, but they're ready to defend this junkyard.
Yep. Yes, they are. Yeah, that is a chunked out Sentinel.
But that is a cool, cool picture of like, bring it. Come on, bring it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we're going to fight over the corpse of our friend for our friend's survival.
You betcha believe it.
It's a good choice. My top favorite one is on page 12, and I call it threat level highest. And that is because that is what the Sentinel is saying, because it's detected Emma's there doing the thing, and it's going to protect all of its friends, and it's all hunched down. It would grabbed up a bunch of students previously, but it's just like, okay, it's too late. We can't escape. I need to protect my friends offensively, so I'm going to get them out of my hands now. So that was the thing that I loved about this, too, is just, yeah, the Sentinel was like, I'm protecting people. I need to protect them from that.
Yeah. Nope. I like it. The Sentinel had some good art in this one. This was a book about the Sentinel. You know what? I'm going to go on a little bit of a theme here and talk about somebody else in the rubber and glue moment, because I have picked the same person for both my rubber and glue moments, and it should become pretty obvious who I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is when this individual is talking about Laura, and she says, it seems stubbornness is in the genes.
Because Logan's always wearing jeans. He loves denim.
It's because Emma has had her feel of dealing with these Wolverines, and she is talking about Laura and about her stubbornness. It seems stubbornness is in the genes. I like Emma. Emma is spicy. What do you got?
Mine is on page 3. It is Justin and the Sentinel talking, and Justin's about to help fix him up, and Justin's all, come here, buddy, let's fix you up. This unit is capable of self-repair. Sure, but I make the repairs look good. I liked it because it's just saying, yeah, I know you can do it, but let me help you. You gotta get your fit right.
Speaking of the Sentinel, according to my favorite person here right now, it has no more personality than a toaster. Once again, Emma coming with the burn. Talking
about Emma's got some
the
burns.
Sentinel, and it has no more personality than a toaster.
Good choice. Now, Emma's usually got a fairly cutting wit, but I didn't pick her for any of mine. I picked something from page 18, which is Stryker and Hank talking, and Stryker's all, but a Sentinel was only trying to protect him. Stryker, it's just a machine. Jocasta's just a machine. Now I know why she left.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Good stuff. Let's talk about some more good stuff. We're going to talk about the Parent of the Year Award, the Reed Richards Award for Good Parenting. Jeff, who is your recipient of this prestigious award?
I'm going to go for very much a Reed Richards version of this award. You know what I mean.
I got one coming too.
It's Pim.
Really?
Yeah, I'm picking Pim just because he was very much just kind of like, oh, okay, Emma's here. Oh, you want to kill this kid's friend? Oh, well, I guess that's cool, right? Oh, you won't just, it's okay. So you don't want to just kill it. You also want to make it so it doesn't like look at all anything. Okay, sure. Yeah, I guess that's good. Come on, kids. We got to get out of here.
He was going for preservation above other things. And I can't fault him for that. Every time I thought that I would give him that for bad choices, I could see why he did it. He was going for preservation. So
it's a tough boat. It is a very tough boat that he is in. But I'm still going to say he had his kids and he wasn't standing up for him as well as he needed to.
See, and here's where I disagree, because I know that for a fact that there is somebody that should get the actual Reed Richards Award for horrible parenting in this issue. And you missed it.
And who's that?
Laura's watchers at her facility.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I mean,
that's a really, really good
choice.
How bad
of parents do you have to be? This is our ward. This is our child here that we are protecting. Here's a puppy for you. Love it. Care for it. Kill it. I mean, that is Dr. Evil level. Dr. Evil.
They were not protecting.
No, no. I take, they were protecting.
Okay, I do not feel they were protecting, and I do not feel that she was their ward. She was their subject.
She is ward subject, meh. But they were protecting her because she is an asset, and they were definitely protecting that asset.
They were developing an asset. I would not say they were protecting it.
Yeah, they were protecting for anybody else getting it.
Mm.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about most popular and most shunned. Who is the best? Who is the worst in this issue? Jeff, what do you got?
Now, I was drawn on making this metal for the worst, just due to the simple fact when Hank has ushered them away and Justin's screaming no, and metal's kind of like just saying, don't look back, just don't look back. It's the pillar of salt, don't look back kind of thing. I'm not going to pick him, though, because obviously it's Frost. Emma Frost was horrible. She's a monster.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's a good choice. It's an easy choice. And you're taking the easy route this time, my friend.
I'm an easy man.
Hazmat asked Laura, hey, yo, can your friends hook me up with a cure?
Yeah. Give me some of that sweet, sweet.
Laura's got a lot of stuff going on. And she's already said that she really doesn't want to be part of this entire thing anyways. But here's Hazmat going, yo, you're friends with God now. You think you can, like, you know, hook me up and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. Can you be a go-between? Can they fix me? They're probably upset with all the Avengers, and I'm an Avenger kid, but...
Can you just let things simmer for a bit first? Can you wait to get put onto that list of things to do? All right.
You mind floating this by them on a Sunday brunch?
Yeah, yeah. Just wait. Wait a moment. Wait a moment. All right.
Yeah, I get it.
Best. Are we tied on this one with Justin?
Justin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tied. Yep, samesies.
Yeah, he loves his robot.
Yeah, he's just great. I mean, he stood up against Laura.
He stood up against Emma Frost.
He stood up against Emma Frost. He stood up against basically everybody. And he also told Laura, this is a place that is accepting of people who are damaged and may do damage. And they're being given chances. And if you don't understand that or like that, there's the door. Maybe you should leave. He was scared, but he was still like, he stood his ground, and I was very proud of him.
And let's not forget this, too. Let's not forget this very important fact. He is so good. White Tiger wants a piece of him.
Yeah, I know. I know. I know. I was going to bring it up, but I didn't, because you did.
I did.
Yep.
I saw it. It just happened right here and now.
That was live.
Live to tape. All right.
Live. That was live to tape. That'll be live whenever somebody's listened to it, and if they bring it back up to us later, I'll be like, well, we talked about what? So
let's go to top grades. We want to evaluate each issue against other issues with a member of the pack in them. And yes, let's bring it up here. Julie was in this issue. She was window dressing.
You better believe she was in some panels.
She flies. Actually, I mentioned both of the panels I think she was in, or two of them at least. Actually, you mentioned one of them as well.
Yep.
She is in the background, ready to fight. She is flying forward, ready to fight. She also is one of the sad, sad people that is in the foreground as Hank is holding Sad Boy in his hand. So she is in this silently, providing support for her friends. But let's see where her sacrifice, her efforts in this book have ranked her against the other issues that we're talking about. Number one, Fantastic Four, Month of Mourning. Spot number 11, we've got Fantastic Four number 3, whatever happened to all those Reeds? That's where the Reeds have snuck into the 616. Spot number 22, Avengers Academy 31, issue before this, Protective Services Part 3. Spot 33, Fantastic Four 604, Frank makes Galactus's Herald. That was pretty awesome. Spot number 44, we've got X-23, number 15, Chaos Theory Part 3. And spot number 55, War of Kings Dark Arc number 2. And bottom of the list is at spot number 58. Where do you feel this issue goes?
Well, as my default starting point of discussion, at spot 22, we have Avengers Academy issue number 31, the one previous to this. Mm-hmm. That's where the fake fight time happened to let the X-Kids escape. What are we thinking? Do we like this better?
I'm going up on this one because this has got really good art. One thing we didn't really touch too much on, which we should have, is this is a different artist than we usually get. And I like...
For this little arc, they have guest artists. Yeah. They have different people in this one. So the stuff still looks good. It's not as good as the normal Avengers Academy artist, in my opinion.
I disagree a little bit because I think that this artwork helps with this story. It's a little shaggier. It feels a little less cartoony, amazingly enough. It feels a little bit more dirty. Look, the Sentinel always looks like it's got some rougher edges, a little bit of damage on it. And everybody looks just a little bit more, I say shaggy, but there's more lines. The hair is a bit more more wavier. It feels a little bit more teen drama, which I like for this book. So I think that Timothy Green II does a really good job of the artwork on this. So I just am saying, I think that this goes up a bit because I think between the artwork, the storyline, and some of the beats that they're getting with what is a friend, I like what they're selling here. So,
oh, no, for the simplicity of the story, there's a lot of complexities interweaving with each other. It's neat. I like it.
Yeah.
I do like it quite a little bit.
I'm actually going up a little bit here, and I'm looking at the first Avengers Academy we have on here. I think it's spot number 15. No, we got some Avengers coming up a little bit higher than that, too.
Yeah, I think we came in on issue number 20, and this is 21.
Yeah, we got number 23 and 22. They're down at 7 and 8. I think I kind of like these a little bit more than those ones. I do like the Julian Brandon talk. That's at number 7 with Second Chances. There's a lot to say about that one, too.
I think there's a lot to be said because of that moment in it.
Yeah.
There was a fair amount of stuff going on. That's when Reptile narrates and Hybrid is introduced and Julian Brandy talk.
I think I like this one more.
I kind of agree. Just the Julie Brandon portion of that was amazing, and I think it really elevated the story.
Above that one, we've got the Fantastic Spider-Man. That's where Spidey and the FF try to fix time and space. That still is a really good issue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that this is better than that.
Let's drop it in the 7 spot then.
All right.
That's pretty simple and easy.
All right. We will say that that is number 7. And Jeff, talk to me a little bit about the beer.
I am drinking it. It is a beverage that is wetting my parched throat.
All right. Thank you very much for that description. I'm so proud
of
you.
It's fine. It's not screaming amazingness to me, but I'm enjoying it enough. It's one that I would pleasantly drink as a beverage quite frequently with great volume.
It's not an easy one to drink. The bitterness is there. I think it's getting a little bit more bitter the more the evening's going on.
For me, it's always had more bitter than sweet anyway, but it's in a reasonable, respectable amount. It's kind of like, hey, I got a little bitter. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. For me, this is a good 3.5.
Yeah, I think I'm going to join you on that 3.5. I think that would be a decent place to put that one. I don't think that it... I think it's good. I think it's decent beer that we can definitely have multiple times. It's just enjoyable.
Yep. Liking it, not loving it. But you know what something is that I love? Kids' perspective. And that's where Rick talks to his 13-year-old daughter, Carrie, about the issue that we just covered. So Rick and Carrie, take it away.
Hello, Carrie.
Hello, Daddy.
Ready to talk about a new comic book?
Yep.
Are you ready to talk about a story about a boy and his robot?
Yeah, it sounds so wholesome, doesn't it?
Tell me what you think of Justin and the Sentinel.
I think it's really cute. I think it's a very nice light that they have shining on that one's Sentinel.
Yeah, they are normally mutant killing machines, which we'll get to. But Justin has reprogrammed this one as best he can, and he's got a very close friendship with it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And what do you think of that?
Like I said, I think it's really cute and adorable and very wholesome.
What's the problem, though?
The problem is that he's at Avengers Academy, which definitely has some mutants. Yep.
Yep, there are some mutants there, and they've got problems, and they're trying to figure out how to deal with it. Who's the number one person that's got a problem with this?
Laura.
Yeah, she doesn't like mutant killing machines, does she?
Well, she's also a mutant, so...
She is her own mutant killing machine.
Yeah.
Okay, so she's got a problem with this, but she's starting to get it. Right?
Yeah. She's starting to understand what the Sentinel means to Justin.
What about Emma Frost?
She doesn't get it.
Did you understand the power that she's got now? Do you understand what happened to her?
A phoenix-y thingy, majiggy something, fire, life, blah, stuff. Yep. Powerful.
Yeah, you've heard about the Phoenix Force. You know that one point in time, Jean Grey had the Phoenix.
And then?
And she became really powerful, right?
And then at some point, Jean Grey died, but that's another thing. Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So the Phoenix Force came back to Earth, and the Avengers and the X-Men were fighting to make sure certain people didn't get it. Somebody got it. Who got the Phoenix Force?
Was it that one girl, Hope?
She was supposed to get it, but she didn't get it.
So it was Emma Frost then?
Well, here's what happened.
I'm so confused. What?
Instead of one person getting the Phoenix Force, 5 people got the Phoenix Force.
Oh, they all shared it. That's what they were talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So it was Cyclops and Emma Frost, Colossus and his sister Magic, and Prince Namor.
Oh, okay. That's good for them?
Sure. They're working in tandem. They are controlling the Phoenix Force, and they've got plans to make the world a better place.
Isn't that just nice? Wow.
You think it's going to last for a while?
No.
No.
It never lasts for a while. People always set out, they're like, I'm going to make the world a better place. They get halfway there.
Yeah, that's kind of what happens here.
That's what happens in, like, comics, though. Like, go ahead, try to make the world a better place, IRL.
What do you think about Emma's goal? She's got certain things she wants to accomplish. What's, like, the number one thing she wants to accomplish?
Destroy all Sentinels.
So we have a problem, right?
Yep. And nope, I don't know. Just no, I'm not on her side. No, she can just back off and stay away. She can just leave.
It takes the Avengers Academy a little while to back up Justin, though, right?
Yeah, because they're already feeling really uneasy about the Sentinel, but...
Also, Emma Frost has a lot of power, right?
Yeah, like a lot of power. Yeah, a lot.
What did you think of this issue overall?
I was surprised that I liked it. Like, I wasn't expecting... It looked like a lot of death was just going to happen, but not really.
What made you like it a lot? Or what made you like it?
I like the connection between Justin and his Sentinel, as I've previously mentioned, like, numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
I also kind of liked at the end when Laura started backing him up after finally getting it.
Yeah. It's nice when friends come to your support, right?
Yeah, even if they weren't your friends at the beginning. So it's great. It's really great.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about this issue?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time, Carrie.
You're welcome.
I love you.
Love you too.
Wow, Carrie, you do that to a puppy? You're a monster.
Yeah, my daughter. Okay. Shout out time. We like to recognize those listeners that take the time to write in or leave us a review. And this is for episode 155, Avengers Academy number 29, Protective Services, Part Uno.
Clinton Robeson and his podcast, Fan Film Fridays and Coffee and Comics.
Colin Stapleton and the worst comic podcast ever.
Hoover Jeremiah.
Jeff Bullier.
Jeremy Daw.
Michael Niertz.
Tim Price, the Podcrasher, and his podcast, The Outcasters.
We also like to... thank those wonderful people who give us a little bit of money to keep doing this lovely show and keep us flush with beer and bandwidth. And I'm talking about adorably astonishing and amazing Andrew Burns.
Cheerfully cheeky and charming Char Logan.
Challenging cheesy and chuckling Charles Gears.
Destructive and devastatingly delightful Damian Witter.
Dynamically dangerous and devious Doug Jones.
Intelligent, interesting, and innovative Isaac Perry.
Jesting, joking, and jovial Jeff Bollier.
Just jealous and jeweled Jeremy Daw.
Muscly, mighty, and meticulous Matthew Birdsey.
Mythical and magnificent monologuing Matthew Laserwitz.
Steely, salty, and steamy Sailor Bear Zodar.
Sad and sickeningly silly Shag Matthews.
Tyrannically terrifying and tame Tim Price.
Way, way wordy and wobbly Waffles.
Weird and wonderfully wacky Wind.
Next issue, we are going to be covering Avengers Academy number 33. What the Heart Wants, Part 2.
Also, you can find us some other places. Sometimes if you look in the back catalog of the Longbox Crusade podcast, you will find my old show, Monthly Monday Movie Muckabout.
And we have some merchandise available on Redbubble. Go to redbubble.com and search for Unpacking the Power of Power Pack.
Jeff and Rick Represent is a bi-weekly self-produced podcast recorded in front of a live studio audience of a couple of scripts that I'm trying to get together in Portland, Oregon. If you would like to interact with us through the magic of the internet, you can do so through Blue Sky at Jeff and Rick Present, our Facebook page, Jeff and Rick Present, our email address, Jeff and Rick Present, all one word at gmail.com, or at our website, jeffandrickpresent.wordpress.com. Also, our YouTube channel is at Jeff and Rick Present.
And if you would like to help support our show, we are on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com, Jeff and Rick Present, all one word. We are also a proud supporter of the Hero Initiative, and we'll be donating 10% of our Patreon donations to this great cause. We encourage everyone to give what they can to this worthwhile organization that helps the creators who provide us with such great content. Go to HeroInitiative.org to find out more.
Please rate and review us wherever you can. Tell your friends about us or share your love for us on social media.
And as always, we want to thank the powerful people in our packs.
My wife Cindy and our daughter Carrie.
My fiance Hillary and our daughter Aurora.
We love you.
Until next time, costumes off.
Our theme music is 80s Action by Kevin MacLeod. Also featured in this episode is Neon Fury by Sasha Ender. All music is found on thecomicdeck.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0 license.
Analyze it. Awesome. an amazing adjacent. Nope.
Shree!
Oh, Justin, you do not give demands to Lemma. You know, Lemma Snicky.